Hi, this is me, Bob Enyart. Hey, where's our opening music? Well, here's what we'd like to do. Following up on a couple weeks ago, we played the audio tracks of our documentary trilogy, Focus on the Strategy, 1, 2, and 3. Well, in those presentations, we used a cameo appearance from a law professor emeritus from Notre Dame, Dr. Charles Rice. Well, on this program, 10 years ago, we had a full interview with Dr. Rice. It was so compelling, so very important to understand what is really going on with the abortion strategy, the so-called pro-life strategy of Focus on the Family and National Right to Life and Concerned Women for America and the USCCB, the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. So what's really going on with all that? And why has it backfired in a colossal way? Well, we're going to go to this interview. I hope you enjoy it. I hope you realize how vitally important these principles are that we will discuss in these matters. And then we took this information and then fully produced Focus on the Strategy, parts 1, 2, and 3, and we'll embed one of those into today's show summary. So you could go to kgov.com. And look for today's program. That's July 20th, 2016. You could send an email to someone to listen to this show, and you could watch Focus on the Strategy right there on the show page. So now, without further ado, from 10 years ago, Dr. Charles Rice on Bob Enyart Live. Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. In the past week, we have debated the wisdom of legislation that regulates abortion. Today, I'd like to add another voice to the discussion, Dr. Charles Rice, Professor Emeritus of Notre Dame Law School. He teaches constitutional law and morality and the law. Dr. Rice has served on the appeal board for the U.S. Department of Education, as a consultant to the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights and to various congressional committees on constitutional issues. He's an editor of the American Journal of Jurisprudence and the chairman of the Center for Law and Justice International and the director of Thomas More Center for Law and Justice. Dr. Rice also served for years as the vice chairman of the New York State Conservative Party, and with his wife, Mary, he has 10 children, and Charles Rice is a longtime defender of the right to life of unborn children. Dr. Rice, welcome to Bob Enyart Live. How are you?
Well, thank you very much, Bob. I'm very happy to be with you. Emeritus just means kind of a retired designation, so I'm still teaching at Notre Dame.
Okay. Before we get to the proposed law that Congress just voted down, the Fetal Pain Awareness Act, I'd like to ask you a few general questions about our pro-life strategy.
Sure.
In progress regarding three issues, really: judges, legislation, and then possible consequences of our laws. Starting with judges, what would it mean for a judge to be pro-life?
Well, you have to go back and see what Roe versus Wade actually held. And the legal issue is not whether the unborn child is a human being, but whether he is a person, because you have your rights to life and to equal protection of the laws because you are a person. Now, in any civilized society, each human being would be entitled to be regarded as a person and therefore entitled to rights. But the Supreme Court in Roe versus Wade held that whether or not the unborn is a human being, he is not a person and therefore has no rights. So the decision is the same as if it were a decision that an explicitly acknowledged human being is not a person, which is the same thing Dred Scott did. It's the same thing the Nuremberg laws did to the Jews in Germany and so on.
Right.
So that's the issue. When you're talking about reversing Roe versus Wade, The only way that that term makes sense is to hold that the unborn child, that each human being from the moment of conception is a person, a legal person entitled to the right to life.
And ultimately, in law, in convincing the majority, it's the personhood of that unborn child that's the fundamental issue.
That is the constitutional issue, the legal issue. And the problem is that everybody talks about reversing Roe versus Wade. And even the pro-life justices on the Supreme Court, and we don't have any Supreme Court level statements on this from Roberts or Alito, but
right.
Even the pro-life justices, when they talk about reversing Roe versus Wade, as you know, Scalia and Rehnquist and Thomas said, that just means turning it back to the states. Right,
right. Now, you know, could we make that really clear for the audience? Because it
sure.
seems to me that generally, when we read about our pro-life Supreme Court justices, we call them pro-life, although we tend to not look at the evidence to the contrary. As far as you know, aside from Alito and Roberts right now, are any of the other justices who were nominated by Republican presidents, have any of them written that an unborn baby has a right to life?
No, well, let me explain that now. Even the pro-life justices, when they say reversing Roe versus Wade means sending it back to the states, what they are doing is implicitly affirming the non-personhood of the child.
Because right.
what they're saying is that the states can allow abortion or forbid abortion. And,
right.
And if you are an innocent human being and your life is subject to extinction, whenever the legislature so says, you are a non-person.
Yeah.
So sending it back to the states and saying, hey, guys, you can do whatever you want with abortion. You can allow the execution of the baby or not. That affirms the non-personhood of the child.
Right. So that is, and this is, we're talking about heroes of the pro-life community on the Supreme Court for many years who actually, their position is pro-choice state by state. They say if a state legalizes the killing of unborn children, then that would be the proper process.
They would uphold that.
Right.
I'm not saying that they're not pro-life. They want to. They're opposed to abortion, but the concepts are all wrong.
Well, John Kerry says he's against abortion,
right.
But he would not impose his. He wouldn't oppose his will.
Yeah. All right. The issue is whether you know, you as an innocent human being are entitled to the protection of the homicide laws. That's basically it. Or can
right.
the legislature withdraw from you the protection of the homicide laws?
Okay.
So you got to keep that in mind. I mean, I'm not throwing rocks at the Supreme Court justices who are trying to do something about this, but the basic concept is personhood.
It would be wonderful if we had at least one of the justices who said that an unborn child has a right to life. But we don't have that. Then we have two new judges, and Samuel Alito has ruled extensively as a federal court of appeals judge. And in fact, he gave the Supreme Court their refined new definition of undue burden. The Supreme Court has adopted Alito's new definition of that a restriction on abortion cannot provide an undue burden to the woman.
Right. You got to be careful about holding that against Alito, because he was on the lower level and
right.
You know, constrained by the Supreme Court precedent. So we'll see what these two guys do when the case is
well. And I'd like,
developed.
Yeah, we will see. But so far, from what our Supreme Court justices have ruled from the Supreme Court, there is not one instance where we can show that they argue that the unborn child has a right to life.
Right.
And sadly, Alito and John Roberts have in their confirmation hearings, in their writings and interviews, they have indicated that their own beliefs on right and wrong are not relevant, that their own beliefs on public policy is not relevant. It's only the process, the procedure that they're there to uphold.
Well, let's see what they do.
Yes.
But it really is, the issue is whether you are entitled to the right to life, which you are entitled to only if you're a person. And
okay.
if the court or depersonalizes an innocent human being, that's exactly what the Dred Scott did.
So now, as we...
And what the Nazis did to the Jews.
Yeah, would a judge be justified in upholding a law that kills a Jewish man for stealing eggs, for hoarding eggs, because he says, well, that's precedent, and I have to follow precedent? Could he be justified then?
I know. The thing is that what Christmas tells us, we're in the Christmas season, all right? And what Christmas tells us is that there is a law higher than the state. Mm. You know, they think of the Magi, all right? The Magi, they performed the first act of civil disobedience of the Christian era when they refused to obey the order of Herod to tell him where the child was. And Mary and Joseph also practiced civil disobedience when they took the child to Egypt. And what this is a sea change. It's a cosmic change that with the coming of Christ, you have the affirmation that the law of the state is subject to the higher law. That is the natural law, which is the law of God. I mean, and that's what's important. So,
Dr. Rice, the way we present it is like this, that God's enduring command, do not murder, should never be violated by any judge or any lawmaker.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're all on the same page. Thomas Aquinas, one of the great philosophers of the Christian era, said no one ever has the right to slay the innocent, ever.
Right,
ever.
Exactly. And I would say that doesn't only apply to German judges, like we tried at Nuremberg, but that also applies to American judges who say they are Christian and they're pro-life, and they affirmatively uphold the right to kill even specific individual children, and they say they have to do that based on precedence or process.
Right. And you get some of these judges will say, well, I'm bound by my oath, and I fail to see how an oath can require you to violate the law of God.
Any oath or process that overturns do not murder has brought you into lawlessness. So they claim that they're following the law, but when do not murder is not applicable, that is actually lawlessness.
Yeah, absolutely. And the this is really a problem that has gone beyond legal issues. It's a cultural thing. It's a religious thing.
It's moral relativism.
Well, yeah, that's what you're dealing with. The relativism is absurd because the relativist says all things are relative.
Right.
Well, if that's true, that statement is relative.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Exactly.
And the problem that we have is that abortion has really gone beyond the law because of the technology. I mean, the abortions increasingly at the present. And surely the dominant abortions of the near future are going to be
chemical.
And you can't really enforce that by the law.
Well, it's more difficult, but we could enforce. We do away with pesticides.
Yeah. I mean, you can do it by indirect measures, but a lot of those substances have legitimate uses.
Right.
As well, and you can't.
Okay. Well, could we now talk about legislation?
Sure.
Pro-lifers have passed hundreds of laws that regulate abortion. And a question I have for you, the Supreme Court might one day overturn its own precedent, Roe v. Wade. When it overturns Roe v. Wade, it could either say the unborn child has a right to life and no abortion is legal, or it could simply strike down its own law. If Roe v. Wade is overturned, with the current justices, it's most likely that they would only strike down their own law and then leave to the states however they would legislate abortion. So if Roe v. Wade is overturned like that, do the laws that are on the books in our 50 states, do they get automatically repealed or would they still be on the books?
That would depend on the state and how the state would handle it. And it would depend also on what the court did and how the court did it. I mean, if the court were truly to reverse Roe versus Wade, which is not going to happen,
right.
The court is not going to do that because the culture has become saturated with the abortion mentality.
Yeah, our judges are moral relativists, and they're affirmed in that position by many of our Christian leaders.
Well, that's correct, and the it's the culture. The culture has has gone that way, and it's gone that way not only with respect to abortion. It's gone that way with respect to
sexual immorality,
homosexual activity, gay marriage, and all the rest of it.
Right.
Really interesting op-ed in the Wall Street Journal of March 2004 by a Methodist pastor, Donald Sensing, S-E-N-S-I-N-G, of Franklin, Tennessee, and he was talking about the gay rights thing. Mm-hmm. And he really put it straight out, and he said, look, it's too late. He said, this issue was decided 40 years ago in terms of the same-sex marriage deal, because it was decided when we accepted the pill, when we accepted the complete divorce of sex from procreation, and it was right on the money. So that's why you're having all these things going on.
The law is the teacher that leads the culture. Our leaders lead. And when our leaders and our laws are moral relativist, then, of course, the culture continues to sink into immorality.
Absolutely right. It works both ways. The law is an educator, and the law is influenced by the culture.
Right, exactly. Right. Now, can I ask you this again? Let's say that the Supreme Court overturns Roe v. Wade. So they throw it out. They don't declare an unborn child has a right to life. They just throw out Roe v. Wade. And so they throw it back to the states.
Right.
Then what I'd like to know is, right now there are hundreds of pro-life laws on the books in the states. If the Supreme Court only threw out Roe v. Wade, are those laws automatically now repealed, or would they still be on the books?
That's going to depend on the state.
Well, I have Indiana.
And the way in which the Supreme Court couched it, they're holding it. It would depend on how the state chose to handle that.
Okay, well, you're in Indiana.
Right.
And you might be more familiar with Indiana's law on abortion than other states. But I have right in front of me Indiana's, the Indiana Code, Title 16, and their requirements for performance of abortion.
Right.
That's the title. Requirements for performance of abortion.
Right.
And I'd like to read you just about 12 words out of this.
Sure, go ahead.
Requirement for legal abortion. It says, abortion shall be a criminal act except when performed under the following circumstances. And one is the woman submits her written consent form.
Right.
Okay, so here in Indiana's law, it says abortion shall be criminal except when the woman submits her written consent form. And there are many variations.
Right.
So now
that's basically the law in every state today.
Well, so now if Roe v. Wade goes away,
mm-hmm.
Roe v. Wade is gone, and the justices did not declare the unborn child has a right to life, Indiana Title 16 still has this 34-2-1, that says abortion shall be criminal except when performed under the following circumstances. And item C is the woman submitting to the abortion has filed with her physician the written consent.
Right. If the Supreme Court simply turned it back to the states, that provision would still be in effect and abortion would still be legal in Indiana. But
thank you, Dr.
Assuming
Rice.
Apparently, we're talking about a case where the Supreme Court would have said, well, the legislature can restrict or forbid. So they could change that law.
Well,
where
they could.
Under Roe versus Wade, they could not.
That's right. And now we have Samuel Alito, John Roberts, and all the other pro-life justices on the Supreme Court that have all stated in their confirmation hearings and interviews, in writing, and even in lower court decisions, that they believe that the states have the right to legislate abortion. So now we pro-lifers, we are up against a wave, literally, of hundreds of our own laws. If Roe v. Wade is simply overturned, our laws will keep abortion legal as long as there's a waiting period or informed consent, parental consent, if it's under a certain age. And now we have to overturn our own laws in order to make abortion illegal.
Right, and the only way you're going to do that is to change the culture, because and the only way you're going to change the culture is really essentially a conversion.
Right. So
a conversion to the conviction, as the Declaration of Independence put it, that you get your inalienable rights from God.
Well, now I'd like to, Dr. Rice, now I'd like to ask you specifically about this Fetal Pain Act that was introduced by National Right to Life, and it was voted down by the House, and so it's not going to be a consideration for a while, at least federally. But this act, H.R. 6099, it informed women that her baby, after 20 weeks, might be able to feel pain, and then it offered a solution that the abortionist has to offer her a painkiller. And so I have a few questions on this. One, these are not legal questions. These are just common sense consequences. Is it possible that women will hear that a painkiller is available for their baby and actually decide to go ahead and have a late-term abortion?
Yes, that's possible. I'm not saying that proposing that kind of restriction is immoral, but I think it's unwise, because there are some things you can do to restrict abortion which do not affirm the non-personhood of the child,
right,
which do not involve downside consequences. For example, cutting off funding for abortions, cutting off, for example, investing state pension funds in
Planned Parenthood.
Or in firms that make abortifacients.
Okay.
And there's so many things.
Let me give you another example. An example is to say that parents must be notified whenever a minor child is undergoing any medical treatment by any licensed clinic or physician. Now, if you have a law like that, everyone acknowledges, I mean, mostly, that parents should know if their children are having an operation. But that would stop short of saying you cannot have an abortion unless you notify your parents. When you do it that way, you're explicitly authorizing the abortion if there's a consent form filed.
Right. The law now, according to the Supreme Court, is that states may require parental consent for an abortion, provided that they have available what is called a judicial bypass, that the pregnant girl can go to a judge and have the judge authorize the abortion if he thinks she is mature enough. Those laws are debatable. I think it's I'm not saying it's immoral to propose them. I think they're unwise, because what they do is equate abortion, put it on the same level with getting your ears pierced.
Dr. Rice, I've read the judicial bypass decisions by the Texas Supreme Court. They had 10 come to them, and Justice Priscilla Owen, one of the heroes of the pro-life community, George W. Bush got her onto the Texas Supreme Court, and now she's a federal judge with the entire pro-life community lobbying for her. Well, Baby 10, the 10th of those came before Priscilla Owen and the rest of the court. And Priscilla Owen signed authorization for this minor child to kill Baby 10, to have an abortion. And the justification she gave is that the lower court judge missed the filing deadline for his findings of fact. So here's a woman who ostensibly believes that the unborn child has a right to life, he's not to be killed, and she then, I believe, because of the influence of moral relativism, she signed the authority to kill that baby because of a paperwork mess up.
I'd have to see that one.
I don't
know the case, and I can't comment on it because of that, but I have to see that. The problem with that whole kind of thing is that if you pass a law saying that you got to have parental consent, these statistics go both ways. Does it reduce abortions or not? But I think what it does is cement into the public consciousness the idea that the right to life is negotiable, and the idea that an abortion really is the same as getting your ears pierced.
It certainly, to the general public, it makes abortion appear more humane.
Right. Now, there are things you can do in state legislation, particularly in terms of funding And putting heavier malpractice liability on abortionists and that kind of thing.
Let's say you educate the public that an unborn child could feel pain. That's fine. But that stops short of saying, and then you could kill the baby.
I think one of the best things we've got going for us in terms of surgical abortion is the ultrasound technique, where the mother actually sees the child. But you got to understand, we have to understand the fact this is a big cultural thing. Pastor Sensing, the Methodist pastor, was absolutely correct when he put this thing back on the contraceptive thing, because when you take the attitude that I am the one who decides whether life shall begin, then it's a short step to say I'm the one who decides when life will end. And now you've got the redefinition of pregnancy, which has occurred since the 60s, so that pregnancy now generally is considered to begin at implantation. So that what that means is that the embryo, right, after his life begins at fertilization, travels down the tube 5 to 7 days, and then implants in the womb. And if you define pregnancy as beginning, not at the real beginning, which is fertilization,
right,
but only when he implants in the womb, then what that does is define the chemicals that prevent that implantation, like the morning after pill and so on, as contraceptives.
Exactly.
And then you claim you're no longer talking about abortion, and the culture has bought that thing hook, line, and sinker.
Dr. Rice, we're about out of time. I'd like to summarize some of the key points,
sure,
that you have made. That the Supreme Court justices, as far as we know, there's no evidence to date that one of them believes that an unborn child actually has a right to life.
As a person.
As a person.
Secondly, a legal person, right.
Secondly, that there is legislation on the books that if Roe v. Wade is simply overturned, then there are pro-life laws that regulate abortion that can keep abortion legal, and we will then have to repeal our own laws in order to stop abortion.
If the court says the states can regulate abortion, then to protect the right to life, you'd have to get rid of the abortion law.
Okay, and you've also indicated that certainly, and this is common sense, not law, but that when you offer a mom a painkiller for her baby, that might actually convince her to go ahead and have an abortion.
This could. It could also have the opposite effect. I mean, it could,
right,
have the effect of this really is a human being.
Right, you know? But you could try to do that without offering a painkiller.
Yeah. I mean, listen, we're talking about the execution of the innocent, and the only moral and ethical and legal, properly legal response is to forbid it. It's no answer to the Holocaust to say that the inmates of those concentration camps have to be given sedatives before they go into the gas chamber.
Yeah, Novocaine.
That's no answer to that.
Right. Not only is it no answer, it could be counterproductive because it makes the most grisly crime appear more humane.
Right, but understand that this is a problem that's beyond the law. It's a problem of conversion. It goes back to the assumption of the power to make ourselves the arbiter of life. And Pastor Sensing was absolutely right. It goes back to the contraceptive thing.
All right. Well, Dr. Rice, thank you so much for
joining us.
Thank you,
Bob. It's my pleasure.
May God bless you. That was Dr. Charles Rice, Professor Emeritus with Notre Dame School of Law, and an honor to have him on the show. Our website is kgov.com, and the video is Focus on the Strategy, analyzing our pro-life Christian strategy. You got to check it out.